Hello, everyone. This is Chad Dotson. You're listening to Red Leg Nation Radio, episode 140. With me today, one of our longtime writers and editors at Red Leg Nation, among other places, Jason Linden. How are you today, Jason?
I am splendiferous.
Oh, wow. Now, so don't start using words that I can't spell.
I don't think that's even a word.
Or, I was going to say, or that are made up. Well, I'm splendiferous, too, because the Cincinnati Reds are winning baseball games, and they've won both of their first two series of the year, and that's our first segment, is that sort of the news of the week, what's been going on, and that's a great place to start. Two straight series out of the All-Star break. Is there any reason that any rational observer would look at this team and not believe that they're on their way to at least making the wild card?
I can't think of one. I mean, I think they're pretty obviously the best team in baseball now, right?
Well, it seems like it. You know, I mean, I don't know how you can dispute that.
If, I mean, they've got a hole, but I think, you know, with a little luck, they can catch the Cubs.
Maybe. I think if the entire, if we say in all of baseball, if that just included the Milwaukee Brewers and the Atlanta Braves, then yeah, I think you could make an argument they're the best team in baseball. They've beaten those two teams two out of three each the first two series of this second half, and you know it is what it is. You're playing the Brewers and the Braves, but it's fun to win.
It's nice to see, and it's a lot better than when they do have to play the Cubs.
Oh gosh, do they still have to play the Cubs? Can't we just, I don't know, forfeit or something? It's just.
And it feels so wrong to be scared of the Cubs.
I know. After all those years of just beating up on the Cubs, now you got to fear them. And it was always awful having them come to town because of all the blue shirts. But now they got blue shirts and a good baseball team, and it really just doesn't seem fair.
Yeah, but I mean, to get back though to your thing, you know, obviously we're what, like six games into the second half, but we're all expecting them to be better, and you know, regardless of whoever else they're playing. Looks a lot better so far. You know, it's a nice way to start. I think most of us realistically are hoping for kind of like a 500 ball club, maybe, you know, for from here on out.
Yeah, and I really don't. And some people are going to laugh at that maybe because they're on pace at the All-Star break to lose what 103, 104. But I don't think it's unreasonable at all to think that the Reds could be a 500 team in the second half. And I don't think we're just being delusional because they beat up on the Braves and the Brewers. We've been saying for a while, you and I both, and a lot of other people, not just us, but you know, the pitching should be stabilized for the second half. The bullpen is certainly stabilized at this point during the set. For the second half, Joey Votto's back. There are a lot of reasons to think they're going to be a lot better than they were in the first half. Now,
yeah, I haven't gone back and actually looked at this, but I mean, the pitching staff has got to have what, like an 80% turnover since the beginning of the year. The only starter left is Finnegan, right? I think everybody else has turned over.
I think you're right because certainly Straley wasn't in the opening day rotation. Cody Reed wasn't. DeSclafani wasn't. Who else are we thinking here? Well, you know, we've had the run of the Adelmans and the
And the John Lambs and whatnot.
Right. Yeah, John Lamb was and he's dearly departed now, having been sent down to AAA. Probably shouldn't say it like that, but 1-7 with a 6.43 ERA earned Lamb a demotion this week. So I hate that for that guy. I thought he showed some things last year that made me optimistic. And he's just 20. Well, he just turned 26, I think. So I don't know.
Yeah, I was talking to a friend. The other day about the rotation and whatnot, and she thought that John Lamb maybe might still be a little bit hurt and maybe pushing himself because he saw this as his sort of one chance to carve himself out a spot in the rotation, because the Reds do have all those players coming along, and this is sort of this awkward year in between, and so maybe he was trying really hard to make sure he was up, and who knows? I mean, he certainly hasn't pitched like he did last year. So it's at least one possible explanation.
That's not an unreasonable theory, because he's certainly just been it's not been a good season. You know, 31 walks, 58 strikeouts in 70 innings pitched. Just it's been ugly. And at some point, the Reds are going to have to start thinking: is this guy? Do we give up on him? And I think he could have sensed that. I mean, it makes sense. This is my shot. This is my one shot. We've got. Cody Reed and Robert Stevenson and Amir Garrett, and then, you know, DeSclafani's coming back from injury, and Homer Bailey be coming back from injury. If I don't take advantage of this now, I may never get another shot. And that would probably motivate someone to pitch through injury. That That would make sense. He certainly doesn't. You're right. He does not look like the same pitcher that we saw. At times, he looked really good last year. And so, where's that guy? I want him back.
Yeah, I mean, I thought for a while, and probably said in various places, that I think his end destination has always been kind of middle relief, which is, you know, fine. There are a whole lot worse things than being a middle reliever in Major League Baseball. But this year certainly has been a rough one on him.
It has been, and yeah, that's probably where most people thought he was going to end up being. And having an effective left-handed reliever, that's not a bad thing. But just disappointed to see the way this has all turned out for him. It's really a big hit to a career that at the end of last year we thought, I thought anyway, had a really good chance of not being necessarily being a starting pitcher, but of being an effective, valuable major league pitcher, probably in the bullpen, but for the next few years. And that still could be the case, but it's a huge setback. A couple of the other pitchers, though, that we have mentioned here, a little bit more success this week and a little bit more exciting news. Cody Reed yesterday, and I know you and I have talked about Cody Reed on this podcast. You're a big fan. He's had a rough start to his major league career, but pitched six good innings yesterday. Gave up no earned runs. Didn't walk a batter. I got a few balls hit hard off of him, but really pleased to see Cody Reed finally.
He finally had that. He's pretty good start. You know, the one that we'd all been waiting for, where you know the carriage maybe shook a little bit, but the wheels didn't come off.
Yeah, you know, and I don't think anyone would have thought that it was going to take until his sixth start to get that, but it is what it is. He's, you know, 23 years old. We say it. We've said it before. We're going to keep saying it 1,000 times. You got to be patient with these guys. Bill Lack and I on this podcast years ago used to say that about Homer Bailey and about Johnny Cueto. It's the number one theme of this podcast, I think, since we started doing these, is be patient with these young guys. You just don't know enough yet to know anything.
You had a post like that somewhere. I can't remember if it was on Cincinnati Magazine or Red Leg Nation, and I know I was banging the drum for that, I think, in the comments or on Twitter or somewhere. It's just, you know, the one I always go back to because it's just so classic is that Greg Maddux was terrible for his first, like, year and a half in Major League Baseball. He was god-awful, and he's Greg Maddux. Like, so you can't. You got to give starting pitchers, and I mean, I think often even position players, you got to give them a good year, you know, especially if they're young, to get their feet underneath them and really figure out what kind of competition they're facing.
Yeah, you're right. Greg Maddux, and that was at Cincinnati Magazine, and I wish you'd have pumped it up more. I'm a little disappointed that you're not boosting my content more, Jason. You need to
get on. I think that. It's because your last check got lost in the mail. I'll
look
for it.
Okay, yeah. No, you're right. Greg Maddux was obviously the one guy that just sort of blows you away to go look at what he did, you know. And Tom Glavine, who was also a Hall of Famer, was in that same road. Same thing, first year or two. But the two, even more recently, the two guys that I also compared were the guys that won the Cy Young Awards last year, Jake Arrieta and Dallas Keuchel. Those guys were terrible early in their career. You know, I mean, why should we think that Cody Reed, who is a great prospect, but why should we think he's going to be able to do things that, you know, some of these other great pitchers? Or I guess why should we think that he's not going to develop just because he's had a rough start? It's clearly over major league history, lots and lots and lots of young, like you said, not just pitchers. That's who I looked at for that piece, but position players as well. Major League Baseball is hard to play. It's hard to be successful. It's hard for a kid that's 23 to do it successfully early on. It takes some time. Be patient.
And even just beyond that, I mean, the kid has pitched 30 innings. 30 innings doesn't tell you anything about anybody. It's why you don't sign relievers to long-term contracts. Because, you know, a reliever pitches 30 to 60 innings a year, and that's a useless sample size for a pitcher. Like, it literally tells you nothing about his ability. Like, you know, and then on the other side of that coin, so far at least, he's striking out like 10 batters per 9 innings. And, yeah, let's just, everybody just take a deep breath.
Right, exactly. Slow down. Good to see him finally, though. You know, he needed some success. He couldn't keep pitching poorly indefinitely and still get to stay in the major leagues. But my opinion is, I don't know that there's a whole lot that he can learn at AAA that he can't learn at the big league level right now. He's got to learn how to get big league hitters out. So let's be patient with Cody Reed.
Yeah, and I can say, just when I saw him in AAA, because I've been to a lot of games at Louisville this year, You know those mistake pitches that major league players have been destroying? When he made those in AAA, you know, he got outs out of those pretty frequently.
Right.
So, and that's exactly what you're saying. Like, he's got to be like, oh wait, no, I actually can't do this. I can't get by with it. Like, if I lose it for one or two batters in AAA, nothing happens probably. But if I lose it for one or two batters in Cincinnati, all of a sudden things are ugly pretty quick.
Yeah, he's got to take his stuff. He's got to take his talent, and now he's got to learn how to pitch to the best hitters in the world. It's hard to do. And so, but I have seen nothing. He's 0-4 with a 6.75 ERA after six starts, and I have seen not one thing that has lessened my opinion of Cody Reed. And there's no reason anybody should be down on him at this time.
Completely agree.
Well, it's about time. You know, you and I have known each other for a while. That's the first time you've ever agreed with me. So
I don't think that's the first.
You don't think so? I don't remember.
No, surely it's happened at least once or twice.
I don't know. Maybe. What about this guy, Anthony DeSclafani, or as I like to call him, Tony Disco? How good's this guy?
Isn't he just a joy?
He really is.
Like, talk about bright spots this year and bright spots where I feel like we might be really seeing something that is at least somewhat likely to endure. He has just had an outstanding year so far. I mean, year since he came back from rehab, but boy, he's been great.
Well, he has, you know, he had that strained oblique, and so he was out for the first part of this year, and he was good last year, all kinds of talent. But he's come back like he's not missed a beat. And not only does he come back like he's not missed a beat, and he's 5-0 with a 2.5 ERA now, but he just looks like he has a clue on the mound, if that makes any sense. I mean, he really handles himself well. He sort of looks like he knows how to craft a start, to coin a term, really. He looks like a number one starter. I don't want to lay that on him just yet, but he was... Since he's come to the Reds, it's been nothing but positives, except for, you know, he got injured. So, yeah, what do you think? Can he be a number one guy?
I mean, if he keeps putting up numbers like this, yeah, I don't see why not. You know, he's putting up basically, you know, certainly strong number two or number one type numbers that you would expect. I always stare at stats while we do these, so I have them for reference. And this tells you many things about how the way the Reds season has gone, but he's pitched 42 innings and he's tied for the pitching lead for wins above replacement in Reds pitchers with 0.9.
Wow. That's sad.
It's him and Dan Straley hanging out up there at the top.
Yeah. Well, you know, this question of can he be a number one starter? That's really sort of a, you know, it's an unfair question. It's really a meaningless question in a lot of ways. I think what I'm pretty firmly convinced of at this point is, I mean, you never know about health with any pitcher, but I'm very firmly convinced that this is real. I mean, maybe not 2.5 ERA real, but this guy is a legitimate, you know, above average major league starter. Just 26 years old, and they got him for Matt Latos, who I don't know whatever happened to that guy, but just a beautiful trade, and love having this guy around. I've heard some people call for him to be traded. I'm having a difficult time jumping on board that one.
I can't understand why you would trade him. He's exactly what the Reds should want right now. We've got like control for what, 4 more years?
Yeah, I think so.
I think after this year, and like, which is right into when they're supposed to be competitive again. He looks like a 3.5 to 5 win pitcher, which is what everybody needs. Like, no, I there's literally no reason to trade him at all if you are at all serious about being competitive in the near future.
Yeah, I keep seeing that, and I just can't wrap my brain around it. He's 26. I mean, it's, you know, everybody thinks, well, you know, we're rebuilding, so we got to trade our good players to get prospects. You know, and yeah, okay, that's part of it, but it's not. You're not just trading your good players. You're trading good players. Here's the way I look at it: that are not going to be on the next good Reds team. And I don't see any reason why. I mean, DeSclafani may not be. The Reds may be in rebuilding mode for 10 years. I hope not. I think there's certainly a light at the end of the tunnel much sooner than that. I think DeSclafani's a guy. He's cheap. He's young. Ride him.
Yeah, I mean, I've said publicly in column form that I think the Reds have a realistic shot at finishing second in the Central next year, which is largely because I think the division after the Cubs is weak. But I think the Reds, next year will be a 500 team.
I heard someone, I don't know if it was Lance McAllister or Mo Egger on the radio yesterday or the day before, say something about, the Reds are not going to compete next year. And I thought, oh, I need to send them Jason's column about how the Reds are going to finish second next year. You weren't necessarily bidding the ranch on that, but I think you're right in terms of it could happen.
Yeah, I mean, I think next year is kind of, this year we all came in being like, okay, they're going to stink. We know they're going to stink, and that's cool. But they're going to stink in service of a larger goal. And, let's see. Let's see what it does. I was, looking back at recent years and that recent run they had. And if you go back and you look at the second half of 2009, they were actually not a bad team in the second half. They didn't make the playoffs. They finished under 500. They were mediocre. But the second half, especially the last few months, if I'm remembering right, they were pretty good. And then 2010 happened. I'm watching very closely. I'm going to be watching them very closely the second half of this year. And I really do think they'll be a 500 team next year with the prospects who are coming along and presumably will eventually play. And with just the night and day change in the pitching staff that frankly should be just about done now. Like, I think what we're seeing now is getting reasonably close to what we'll see next year. It's not there all the way, but it's a heck of a lot closer than where we were back at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I think there's Homer Bailey's, but maybe one or two more starts. I think he started today, as a matter of fact. I didn't see how that went. How'd that go today? Did you see?
It wasn't in Louisville. I saw stuff on Twitter. He threw 83 pitches. I recall that he gave up 3 home runs, which people weren't real excited about. I'm not sure. I haven't seen reports on it yet. I do know the time I was able to talk to Homer after one of his rehab starts, he'd given up a home run and made a point of saying that he was really trying to make sure he didn't walk anybody, kind of working on control. And, that kind of had resulted in a home run for him because he sort of refused to walk somebody. And I gather he kind of, if he was going to miss, he was going to miss in the strike zone, and he missed in the strike zone. So that might have been what we saw today. It might not have, obviously. I don't know. I wasn't there. But yeah, I gather he pitched about as many pitches as you would want him to have, but the results weren't necessarily great. And I assume they're probably hoping next time out he has good results and a good number of pitches, and then up north he goes.
Yeah, and you say up north, because that's a pretty good phrasing, because he's sort of, I think what his point was, I believe, he's using this a little bit of spring training, which it really is for him.
Yeah.
Now, at some point, he is going to have results, but they're expecting one, maybe two more starts, I would think, at the most, if everything goes according to plan. And so he'll be up, and so you'll have Homer Bailey, Anthony DeSclafani, Cody Reed, Brandon Finnegan, and, of course, Straley as well. But four of those guys, Finnegan, DeSclafani, Reed, and Homer, are guys that have a pretty good chance of being in your rotation next year. Who that other guy is going to be, whether it's Amir Garrett or Robert Stevenson or Straley, it could be, I don't know. Rosell Iglesias is who I hope it is, but I'm worried about whether that's ever going to happen. You're starting to see this rotation that we're talking about, the next good Reds rotation. You're starting to see it taking shape, and that's, to me, that's a huge reason to be excited about the second half of this year. Watch these guys.
I've really started to wonder if Garrett is going to get a call up. I don't think most of us thought he would be there, but I've read a couple of things where, and I read at least one article where the Reds kind of didn't say that he wouldn't be up. They didn't say, they were asked, and they didn't say he would, but they didn't say he wouldn't either. And he had one sort of shaky getting used to it start, his first start in AAA, and ever since then he's just been lights out. To the point where you kind of wonder if he's hit that point where, like Cody Reed, he's got nothing else to learn, and is it time to bring him up? I kind of selfishly hope that it takes a little bit just so I can watch him pitch more easily for a little bit, because he's pretty fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, he's something else, and he's a guy that's really, as you alluded to, he's forced his way into the conversation here. I talked about the young pitchers in a piece I wrote before the season, and I just sort of mentioned him, but didn't really give a whole lot of time to him because, you know, I thought he wouldn't be here maybe by sometime midseason next year. And the reason for that is this is a guy that played Division I college basketball. He didn't have as much experience as a lot of guys, still learning to pitch. But since he's started with baseball full time, man, it's been he's shooting up the I think over two levels. His ERA is 1.72. I think I saw it today over AA and AAA this year. And if he keeps doing what he's doing at AAA, you know, how can they keep from bringing him up?
I think at the beginning of the year, you know, it's interesting that how in some ways, like, Robert Stevenson's stock has dropped, and it's not because of anything Robert Stevenson has done. It's been because of how good Cody Reed and Amir Garrett have been. That I feel like, personally, from what I've seen, that Stevenson's kind of like the number three prospect in the system now.
And he's been, by all the ranking lists, the number one pitching prospect for a few years now, or at least a couple years. And you're right, Stevenson's not had a great year like those other guys. He's had a reasonable year, about the year you would expect, I would think. He's having some issues with control, but I don't have any reason to be down on Robert Stevenson. I mean, he's
still not at all.
A great prospect. But Cody Reed and Amir Garrett have just shot into outer space here. And that's exciting. That's the most exciting thing about this rebuild is watching guys like that and guys that are got a chance to be stars, seeing these guys make their debut and really – I said yesterday that I've had more fun watching this team probably than any team since maybe even 2012, any Reds team. And that's why these young guys, seeing them debut and seeing this team starting to take shape, yeah, they've stunk this year. But I don't know. I'm having a good time watching them. I may be clinically insane, but it is what it is.
No, I agree. I mean, especially now that we are hitting that point where the team is starting to head where it's going to be, it's just like, okay, let's see what the kids do. You know, I don't even pay attention to the record, really. I'm just like, well, let's, you know, how's this player hitting it right now? And how's the pitcher? You know, you just look at individual stats and kind of think, well, what does that mean for next year? And then you go on about your day.
Yeah, you know, may get Jesse Winker sometime soon. Amir Garrett, maybe. There are a lot of fun young guys on this team, and I think they're a better product than we've seen. I think they're going to win more games the second half, as we've said. Probably the single biggest, to shift gears just a little bit, the single biggest disappointment of the season, with the exception of Alfredo Simon, who I know you had on your fantasy team. Let's not go there. I hope we've seen his last day in a Reds uniform. Devin Mesoraco.
Devin.
I know. Mesoraco seems like just the best guy. I mean, he really does, but he had surgery on his other hip. He'd already had surgery on on his left hip last year for that hip impingement that caused him to miss most of the year. He had surgery on his other hip, his right hip, I guess, this week. And he's had surgery in the meantime as well on his shoulder.
Do they need to get the other shoulder just to make sure they get all of them?
They might as well. Maybe they should replace both knees while they're at it, too. Poor guy. I mean, all-star season, and then now since that all-star season, he started, I think, 18 games I saw in 2 years.
It's not like we're not angry at Devin Mesoraco, which you just feel awful for the guy.
Oh, I hate it. It's really one of the worst things that I've seen happen to this team because it is a guy that's a hard worker and that is just a fun guy to watch, and he finally came into his own after being the number one draft pick. And oh, man. The Reds, you know, Dr. Krymchek and the Reds were saying after the surgery that they think it's going to make him more athletic and that he should be able to come right back, and there's no reason he shouldn't be able to catch when he gets back next year. But, gosh, I'm skeptical if this guy's ever going to catch again in the major leagues, at least on a regular basis. And if he can't catch, where does he play?
If Devin Mesoraco returns and is anything close to an everyday catcher, then you will know that you are watching a charmed Reds season. There's nothing against Devin Mesoraco. I feel awful for him. But, he's had 100 at-bats or plate appearances in, 2 years. And, oh boy.
Yeah, that's when you'll know they're a team of destiny next year on their way to the playoffs if he's your starting catcher. It's just, he'll be 29 next year, I believe. And, I mean, I just can't think where they can play him if he's not a catcher. We've already got a first Well, yeah, we got a first baseman signed for next year. I couldn't remember, but yeah, it turns out.
Yeah, some Votto kid.
Yeah, yeah, he signed for next year, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. And so, I don't know, where else? Right field?
I suspect, and I'm on record as heavily suspecting, the Reds are going to need another outfielder at some point who is not named Winker or Hamilton.
You think so? Maybe.
I suspect.
Are we already forgetting All-Star and Home Run Derby participant Adam Duvall?
We are not forgetting, but what we are doing is, as I talk over myself, scrolling through things real quickly, is wanting to acknowledge that his OPS in July is 638.
That's not great.
No,
that's not great. Yeah, you know, we always thought, because that the number one indicator obviously is that on base percentage below 300 all year, and the strikeout numbers. We always figured he was due for a correction. I can't wait to see how many people blame it on the Home Run Derby, though.
Oh God! I beat the sample size drum all the time, and I'm certainly not pronouncing Adam Duvall's time as a productive hitter over based on half of a July, but I know that I haven't by any means like sort of watched every game this month or anything, but when I've been watching him play, it has seemed to me all of a sudden like pitchers are really adjusting. I feel like he's been seeing a lot more stuff outside the strike zone and often swinging at it, which is kind of what I had kind of been saying. This is probably going to happen because he doesn't seem to have great plate discipline. And if that keeps happening, if they keep throwing outside the strike zone and he keeps going after it, then that's going to be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's to be said about Duvall. He is what he is. He's a low on base guy that can run into a home run occasionally. I know people don't want to hear this, but he's not your starting left fielder for the Reds for the next 5 years.
And the thing that he's about to turn 28. I mean,
17 months younger than Jay Bruce.
Right. Like, you know, it's one thing. There's been Suarez has been getting a lot of flack because he's had a pretty rough year in a lot of avenues. But Suarez is a lot younger than Adam Duvall, you know, and with somebody that age who still really doesn't have a ton of time in the majors, like, I'm much more willing to be like, you know, let's wait a little bit and kind of see what happens. Whereas with Adam Duvall, you kind of have to assume that what you see is what you get, because he's not getting any better.
Yeah, I mean, he's right around where his peak would be, and whereas Suarez, well, you can live with some poor performance at his age, 24, because, well, it's a rebuilding year, and that's what this year's for. Let's see what we got here, so I don't know. So you're right. They're going to need another outfielder, but can Mesoraco play outfield?
No, that's a valid question.
He's not particularly quick in the best of circumstances. I guess you don't have to cover as much ground if you have Billy Hamilton beside you. But
well, and you know, along those lines, and I look, Jesse Winker is ready, major league. Like, he's major league ready. That kid can hit. He's ready now. He is not fleet of foot, and he is not going to cover a lot of ground in the outfield. So if you put Hamilton in between Winker and Mesoraco, you may be testing even Billy's limits.
Well, let me ask you this, if you have an opinion on it. Let's say we get to next spring, and you've got four quote-unquote outfielders. You've got Adam Duvall, you've got Jesse Winker, you've got Billy Hamilton, and you've got Devin Mesoraco. And those are the guys that are on your roster. How do you play them?
I mean, I'd start Mesoraco, Hamilton, and Winker every day, and Adam Duvall can be the fourth outfielder.
I want them to revisit third base. I know Duvall was a disaster in San Francisco at third base, but I want Duvall at third base. I want Suarez at second base. I want Jose Peraza. You may have heard of him. He's been on the team, but he didn't get a play. You may have him at shortstop. That's what I want to see next year. Winker in the outfield. I guess Mesoraco. I don't know.
You know, somebody I would keep an eye on still, and he's kind of fallen off the radar, is Philip Irvin, who's had pretty solid numbers. He kind of fell off, I guess, in Pensacola, but he's still somebody who could come along. But then we've also got to remember, with, you know, you're saying maybe Duvall at third, that the reports I've seen say that Nick Senzel could potentially be ready mid to late next year. Wow. And he's a third baseman.
He has, you know, and you're talking about the number one draft pick this year, Senzel out of the University of Tennessee. The Reds picked second overall, and I think was universally praised for that. The Reds were universally praised for that selection. He's a guy that understands the strike zone, has some pop, and pretty good defensively has been the reports. And you're right, he has hit the ground running in his professional career. He really is looking good. And if he could be available next year, all of a sudden, you know?
All of a sudden.
Not to pull a Tom Brenneman-ism out on this, but all of a sudden, some of these holes are starting to get filled.
And, yeah, I mean, I may or may not have done a happy dance in my chair when they picked Nick Senzel. Just because it is such a departure from what sort of the organizational like focus on tools that has been so inherent in the last several years, to just get somebody who understands the strike zone. And, you know, so far, and granted, blah, blah, sample size, but he has currently 14 walks and 16 strikeouts. And the more players the Reds can have who walk as much as they strike out, the better they will be.
Oh, yeah. And I remember seeing you tweet just before the draft that that's the guy you wanted them to get. And it is a bit of a departure, but it's exactly the type of guy they need in their lineup. And this is a guy
that never do what I want them to do.
No, it's about time.
I don't know what I'm talking about. It's fun when it happens every once in a while.
Yeah, you stumble into one every once in a while. So, I don't know if next year or not, but he's a college guy. He played in the Southeastern Conference, which is a pretty good college baseball conference. It's not the Atlantic Coast Conference, home of the Virginia Cavaliers, 2015 national champions, but it's a good college conference, and he's the type of guy that you would think would be able to jump in pretty quickly. And people keep throwing Chris Bryant's name out as an example. Let's not start comparing him to Chris Bryant, but it'd be great.
That'd be cool though.
Oh man, can you imagine?
It's like Jesse Winker reportedly has a Brian Giles ceiling. So if we can get Chris Bryant at third and Brian Giles out there in right or left or wherever, then that might be a pretty good team.
Yeah, sign me up for that. And then, of course, because it's going to be our team of destiny next year, Devin Mesoraco, 25 home run and 80 RBI, Devin Mesoraco playing right field. So.
Oh my! If all of that would happen, I think that Reds Twitter would just collectively explode.
Oh yeah, there would be no more Reds Twitter. What would you complain about? Oh, I'm sure they'd find something to complain about. Billy Hamilton's what they'll complain about. I'm sick of fighting that battle, man. Everybody's beating me down over Billy Hamilton.
Not me. I agree with you on Billy.
He's not a superstar right now, but man, I love that guy. I love that guy. He's making progress, I think. But anyway, I spend way too much time talking about Billy Hamilton. I gotta lay off it a little bit. Since we want to make sure we are a completist when it comes to giving all the Reds news of note in the last week. John Mosca, you know, a guy that I thought had a chance of sneaking his way in, maybe not as a fifth starter, but as a bullpen guy, swing guy, something like that. I mean, I thought he had a good enough arm that he could put himself in the mix to be on the next good Reds team. Underwent Tommy John surgery this week, and wish him as speedy a recovery as he can get. But that's a tough break. That guy's just one bad break after another.
It's also one of those things that had happened, and my immediate reaction was, well, that explains a lot.
Right, exactly.
He hadn't been pitching like he should have been pitching, and it's another one where I'd seen him in Louisville several times, and it just wasn't right, and he just clearly didn't look right, and it was like, oh, okay. He was hurt.
Well, he was giving up 10. He gave up 10 home runs in 21 innings, and just was. That wasn't the John Mosca that even just from his time in Cincinnati before this year, before he got hurt last year. I mean, he was a kid that had put up good numbers in the minors, and you thought could be a decent big leaguer, and still hopefully will be. Mosca's just 24, so just a tough break for that kid. He's had he got hurt last year on the base paths, I believe. I recall hurt his shoulder diving back into second, I think, and. Just another bad break. But you're right, it does explain some things.
The fact that John Moscott is only 24, I don't know why this sort of jogged this in my head, but it did. I was looking at things last year, or not last year, earlier this year, and it dawned on me that aside from Joey Votto, it's entirely possible there will be no one on the roster next year who's over 30.
Oh, how wrong you are, Jason.
There's that one player.
There's one guy that's going to be the starting second baseman.
Should we get to that now?
Let's go ahead and dig into the question of the show. What should the Reds do with Hall of Fame, Team Hall of Fame, Reds Hall of Fame second baseman Brandon Phillips?
They should cut him.
Wow. Jason, Brandon is one of the best players in Reds history.
He certainly is, and he's had a wonderful decade, and his time as a good baseball player is over.
Oh, time marches on. It happens to the best of us. You know, I did some digging about Phillips, and of course, you know, a lot of people dislike Phillips, a lot of people love Phillips. Everybody's got their opinion on Brandon Phillips. I think everyone will agree that he's been one of the top two or three second basemen in the history of the Reds, and I think as I looked it up, only maybe seven guys since 1900 have had more played more games or got more plate appearances for the Reds, seven guys at any position. So, I mean, let's tip your cap to this guy. Really good career, an all-star career, and I'll be happy to see him get his red jacket when he gets inducted into the Reds Hall of Fame. The Reds have had, count them, zero primary starters at second base who were age 36, going back to 1900. They've never had a starter at second base. You know, a spot start here and there, Juan Castro, occasion, things like that. But a guy that's their starting second base never had one that's age 36, which is what Phillips will be next year.
Well, and there's a good reason for that, because there haven't been that many in the history of baseball.
Right, right.
35 is kind of a magical age for a second baseman, because second base is such a weird position. You know, it's kind of the all of the shortstops who weren't quite good enough to stick at shortstop. And so they kind of age out.
It's really true, and that's certainly been the case throughout Reds history as well. And as I started digging, I saw there were only two other guys who'd even started at age 35 like Brandon is now. And those two, I said earlier about Brandon being one of the top two or three Reds ever, and the other two guys are the other top Reds second baseman in history. Lonnie Frey from the 30s and 40s, and key player on those 1939 National League champions and the 1940 Reds World Series champions. The other guy's a guy you may have heard of. He played for the Big Red Machine. His name was Joe Morgan. Pretty good player.
It rings a bell.
But that's what struck me. Joe Morgan started at second base for the Reds at age 35. He was like a 2.9 win player, something like that. You know, still effective.
Chad, I got to interrupt you here because I just looked something up, and it's pop quiz time, and you're going to be amazed by what the actual answer is.
Oh, I can't wait. Let's hear it.
In the history of baseball, how many players do you think there are who have had at least one season where they qualified for the batting title at second base at the age of 36 or older?
Twenty-eight. Gosh, in the history, and we're talking not just the Reds, we're talking every team.
Since 1871.
Oh, my goodness.
20. Right? Yeah, I was like, I'm just curious. I think that's pretty rare. Let me look it up real quick.
Wow.
And, yeah, that 28 ever.
Okay, and so you have to ask, what about Brandon Phillips is there that makes you think he should be number 29? And it's not his performance on the field. He's been below replacement level this year. And again, I know it sounds like we're criticizing Brandon Phillips. We're not. He's had a great career. This is what it is. It happens.
No, I'll actually tell you who I am kind of criticizing right now. That was the Reds front office.
Oh, yes.
Because Jocketty and Price, and if I'm mistaken on this, tell me, but I don't think I am, have both said that Peraza is blocked as long as Phillips is here, which makes no sense at all.
And that there's no explanation for that. None. He's not blocked here. Make the decision. It's time for a difficult decision to be made. And you also have to say Jocketty is the one who handed out, although it may have been more Bob Castellini, handed out a contract extension through age 36 season for Brandon Phillips. But the one thing that really just sort of chafes at me is that Joe Morgan, the Reds cut him loose after his age 35 season. Joe Morgan, maybe the best second baseman in the history of baseball, certainly the best Reds second baseman. They cut him loose. They let him go after his age 35 year. Why should we have such an affinity for Brandon Phillips? Why should emotion get in the way that Brandon Phillips is treated differently than Joe Morgan was? It's
there's no reason. I mean, somebody, at the very least, they need to sit Phillips down and say, we appreciate everything you have done for the organization, but we've got this kid coming, and he's the second baseman of the future, or shortstop perhaps even, but he needs a place to play. And we are happy to have you on as, you know, a bench player and somebody. You know what? I bet Brandon Phillips would actually be really fabulous at helping young players, you know, middle infielders with fielding technique. I mean, he's one of the most enjoyable people to watch play second base ever.
Yeah.
Like, you know, try to talk him into accepting the role, you know, and if he doesn't, and if he, you know, if he wants to be kind of grumbly or refuse to accept the diminished role, then cut him loose. But like, man, it's time.
Yeah. Yeah. You really just can't let emotion in here. Jose Peraza may not be anything. He may just be a utility guy. It may just be what he is. But, you know, he's 22. We're not going to know. Now's the time to be playing him to find out whether he's going to be a guy that can be valuable. It just, and you say cut him, and that seems harsh, but they're going to be paying him either way. It's a sunk cost.
Yeah, yeah.
If he's going to cause problems, I'm sorry. Every career comes to an end. That's the way it is, and Brandon Phillips is no exception to the rule. And if he's not producing...
And he had two chances this last season to go somewhere else.
Yeah, yeah. And he could have been the starting second baseman. Boy, the Nationals have to be breathing a sigh of relief, but because they got Murphy, who's been fantastic. But could have been the starting second baseman on a possible playoff team. But and I don't fault him, but he earned the right not to be traded. You know, he could make that choice, but it's just turning out as poorly as you could have imagined it would. My personal opinion is that the Reds are waiting. I think they're going to see if they can trade Zach Cozart to avoid having to upset Brandon Phillips. I really believe this, and it blows my mind that I'm actually saying it. And then they'll put Peraza at shortstop to give him a place to play.
That's actually not a bad point. I mean, if Cozart does get traded, they do kind of have right now sort of one fewer players ready than they really need to fill the short second and third base kind of spots. So if they trade Cozart and then they need somebody to play short, then you might as well play Phillips at second. The thing that just utterly blew my mind was when Phillips, and he still is hurt, right, with the broken hand. That hasn't healed all the way yet. And then he hurt his leg, and he's still playing every day. And it's like you have one of the top prospects in the system sitting on the bench, and he plays second base.
Yeah. Started in left field today.
Yeah,
it's complete insanity. But I wouldn't be surprised if, say, they're unable to trade Zach Cozart, then the Reds make that immediately after the trade deadline, make that decision. And
that's an interesting prediction, and I would not be surprised if it came true.
Yeah, well, we'll see. I don't know. They may want to move. They may want to move Suarez back over to short if they trade Cozart. I don't know what they've got in their mind. But
I have big opinions about that. If you want to hear,
why not? We got a couple minutes here.
I really think if I were running the Reds right now, this is what I would do. No one's going to listen to me. And again, file this under Jason doesn't know what he's talking about. But what I would do right now is I would go ahead and cut bait with Brandon Phillips. And if you can get Zach Cozart traded, you trade him. Much as I do enjoy Zach Cozart. And then you put Peraza at short, where I think he's good enough to stick, and you move Suarez back over to second base, where I think he's much better suited, and then you fill the gap at third. And for me, having seen him in the field several times now and to continue to boost him, I'd put Jermaine Curtis at third base for half a season and then see how long it takes Nick Senzel to get ready. And then when Senzel is ready, Jermaine Curtis can be a utility guy.
I would sign on to that. Where do I find the legislation that I can sign? Find the petition. I'll boost that.
You know, we had a little Twitter exchange a while ago talking about fun above replacement. And that infield that I would just mention would be a whole heck of a lot more fun than what they're running out there right now.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I think probably if I were making the decisions, and this is even worse than the idea of you making the decision, I would do most of that. Phillips would be on the bench. And if he couldn't accept that, he can go wherever he wants to go. He can go home. I would have Suarez at second. I would have Peraza at short. I just want to see him. I know that It may not work. I want to see Duvall at third.
And I can see, I can totally see the case for that. At least give him a shot there and see what we see.
Yeah, because if he, you know, he might be able to hold it down until Senzel's ready, and then you can get that creates room for Winker. Of course, now if Jay Bruce is traded, then there's going to be room for Winker anyway. But
I mean, there's no if on Jay Bruce. I haven't seen anybody who vaguely has reason to know say anything other than Jay Bruce will be traded.
Jay Bruce will not be traded. Now, of course, I have no reason to know, but I'm telling you, he's not going to be traded. They're going to sign him to an extension for 4 years just because it's going to make me happy. And this is why I should not be running a baseball team.
Yeah, me either, because I would be cool with that. Right now, if I were in charge, I would probably be like, so, Jay, 4 years, what do you think?
Yeah. Will you take it? Yeah. I would do that. And it's emotional, and it's certainly there's a great argument. That's a terrible idea for the organization. But, yeah, that's what I'd do. I just hope they can get something in return for him. I'm really concerned that he's not going to bring much, and I don't know. That'll be pretty frustrating for me just because I like the guy so much. He's so affable.
He's very affable.
Yeah, completely affable.
I mean, I will say, and I may have said it here before, I know I've said it in other places, I repeat myself a lot. It's what comes to being a teacher. I just tell the same stories over and over again to different audiences. But, you know, did I just completely lose track of what I was going to say? I might have. What were we talking about?
We were talking about Jay Bruce and why he shouldn't be traded and why I'd be a terrible GM.
I don't know. I had a really good one. I was going to say it. Now it's just gone. It's
all right. Well, interrupt me when it comes back. But I think the question of the show is, what should the Reds do with Brandon Phillips? I think we're both on the same page.
Yeah.
At the very least, he needs to go to the bench immediately. Not yesterday. Well, it should have been yesterday, but not tomorrow, not a week from now.
Should have been when he broke his hand.
Yes, absolutely.
I mean, should have been when Jose Peraza came up.
Wouldn't that have been a perfect time? And, of course, it'd been a perfect time to say, all right, let's give Peraza a shot here, let Brandon heal up. And of course, Brandon is not dumb. Brandon sees the writing on the wall. He hears what everyone's saying. And that's why he's trying to play hurt. He thinks he's about to get Wally pipped.
And he is. I mean,
well, yeah, but it's less Wally
pipped. Not if, it's when.
Right. Does he think he's going to be the starting second base forever? No. I don't fault the guy for wanting to hang on to what he's got. I really don't. I mean, you can't. That's why if I'm a 35-year-old guy, first of all, I'd be happy because I'd be younger than I am now. But if I were a 35, almost 36-year-old guy and my time is dwindling down, I'd be trying to hang on to every last at bat and every last second. I would. I don't fault Brandon for wanting to play, but somebody has to be in charge in this organization, and somebody's got to make these tough decisions, and it should not be Brandon Phillips' decision to make whether he's in the lineup every day.
Yeah, I mean, baseball players and I think athletes in general are famously terrible at playing long after the ability to play at the necessary level has deserted them. And, that's why you got to have people in the front office saying, you know, no, thank you for your time.
Right, yeah. I mean, I, again, that's what I would do if I were one of these guys. I'd be trying to put on that uniform every day someone would let me put it on for as long as they let me put it on. So, yeah, I mean, it comes down to Brian Price has to make that decision. And the front office has to back him up or the front office has to tell him. Walt Jocketty and Dick Williams have to say, okay, enough's enough. We got this kid who we traded Todd Frazier for, who was one of the most popular guys in town. It's time to see what we got here, whether this is a guy that can help us. So, I don't know. I don't know if it's going to happen. I don't think it happens before the trade deadline anyway. So it may happen afterwards. All right. Well, that's just about all we got here. There was one last. Was there anything else you wanted to talk about before I get into our last topic?
I don't know. Were we going to talk about how wonderful and super dreamy Joey Votto has been lately?
Oh, yes. Yes. And we skipped right over that. Man, that guy, he's a good baseball player.
He's good at baseball.
Wow. He's dreamy, and he's just, oh, gosh.
It's giggly, isn't it?
Yes.
We get to watch Joey Votto play for our favorite team. How lucky are we?
I mean, really, that's something that I know you and I have both been saying for years. Is, oh, you Reds fans, you need to understand, this doesn't come around all the time. You don't get a chance to watch a guy who just is a master of his craft play every day for our team. And Joey Votto, I don't know what was going on the first 2 months. It was I don't know. I'd like to know the story on that. But you look around now, and he's the most productive Reds hitter for the season. He's just
by quite a bit now. Like he really is starting to lap the competition.
Yeah, he's blowing by everyone. And let me pull those stats back up. I had him up a minute ago, but yeah, it's,
since June 1st, Joey Votto, and this does not count today when he improved his numbers further. But since June 1st, he's hitting .346, getting on base .491, and slugging .549.
His on base percentage for the season is now it keeps going higher, but it's around .405 or something today. I think after today's game,
every day I kind of get up and look at Joey Votto's numbers getting better because they make me happy, and I was looking at the first baseman leaderboards today. And there is a grand total of one first baseman in Major League Baseball currently who has a better W run created plus, which, okay, fancy stat, but basically how far above or below average are you? Their number there, there's one first baseman in all of baseball right now whose W runs created plus for the season is above Joey Votto's career number.
Wow. That's saying something, and you can only imagine.
Joey is really good.
He is, and there's reason to hope that by the end of the season, if he has another second half like it's looked like he's having, but if he can match, he maybe can't match it, but come somewhere close to what he did last year. Well, look up at the end of the year, and you'll be like, wait a minute, and he really was in a slump for 2 months, yeah.
He had a pretty terrible slump last year too. Last year, like his slump to start this year was worse than last year's, but only by a little bit. The timing was a little different. And I know that surprised me when I looked at it. And then just kind of when I think it had gone on long enough that all of us were starting to panic at least a little bit, I was looking at things. And I'd never realized this, but Joey Votto really has been very much a second half player for most of his career. His numbers in the second half are a lot better for his career than in the first half, which surprised me because I hadn't noticed it before.
And when he gets in these streaks like now, though, and we talk about streaky players with Jay Bruce all the time, but Votto's streaks last months and months and months. But when he's locked in like he is now, there's no hitter in baseball that I would rather watch. Because you talk about a master of his craft. Just... I love the guy. I wish he didn't check out on defense sometimes.
His defense is just, it's an adventure.
Yeah, but he's your first baseman. You're not expecting that guy to be a great defender, but it's an adventure. I mean, sometimes the other day he made a couple of great plays. So
Joey Votto plays first base in some ways, kind of like Jay Bruce hits. It's like, wow. Oh.
Right. Yeah. I just keep thinking about Ted Williams' reputation was that he'd be out in the left field and he'd be have his glove under his arm and working on his swing out in the left field. And Votto's not doing that, but these guys are paid to produce at the plate, and so he's certainly doing that. And it's just fun to watch. Yeah, Joey Votto.
It's a joy.
Man. Can we just sit here and think about Joey Votto for a little bit longer?
I do this every day.
That's a great.
It's the best way to start your day. Pour a cup of coffee, see what Joey Votto did yesterday in context, and then just go, well, that's nice.
Oh, man. Yeah, in an often depressing world, that's a pretty good way to start each and every day. Get a smile on your face. Well, I'm glad we got into Joey Votto. That is something I had on my list and skipped right. How could I skip right over Votto? I don't know. But one last thing I wanted to just very briefly touch on is that the Hall of Fame induction ceremony is going to be happening this week, and our old friend Ken Griffey Jr. going into the Hall of Fame. And I know people got down on Jr. after his career in Cincinnati. He was hurt all the time. He wasn't the same kid as he was in Seattle. But, man, I love me some Ken Griffey Jr., and I'm really happy to see him getting honored. And I'm glad the Reds have tried to honor him for what he did with the Reds during his time here. I wish that he'd been, this is the same with every Reds star over the years. I wish, since the Big Red Machine anyway, I wish he'd been treated a little better, but but really happy for Junior. Any thoughts about King Griffey Jr.?
You know, I don't know that I really have that many. He was, his Reds career was kind of enigmatic, and it was just, you kind of, He's actually kind of a really good example of the front office kind of not saying what needed to be said, you know, which was, you know what, maybe you should play right field.
Right. Yeah, you're exactly right. Because if you look especially at the way his defense declined late in his career, oh, it was really, really brutal.
Because he was hitting when he was healthy. Boy, I mean, poor man just destroyed his legs. But when he was on the field, he hit. I mean, he hit almost his entire time he was with the Reds. It was just the defense that killed things.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but all-time great. Really happy to see him. And he's not going to probably have a Reds cap on.
I do. I have a good sort of Griffey anecdote here. This comes from one of the people in the Bats organization who I've been able to talk to. That apparently, at one point, for obvious reasons, Barry Larkin was in Louisville and talking to some people. And somebody asked him if Griffey had called him or said anything to him around sort of the Hall of Fame vote or whatever. And he was like, yeah, you know, he called me and he said, do you think I'll get in? And he was serious. And it's just like, that's such an excellent little story, you know, of how human everyone is, where even Ken Griffey Jr. is like, oh, I hope I make it.
Right. Yeah. That is a great anecdote. And I've heard a lot of stories over the years. He always got a little bit of a criticism for being aloof or things like that. But I've heard so many stories about what a great guy he was to his teammates and to the people around the organization. And, I think probably he's a really funny, really neat guy to get to know, and that's a pretty good story that illustrates that. So congratulations, Ken Griffey Jr. I hope that Joey Votto joins you in Cooperstown someday. All right, Jason, you ready to call this one quits?
I think that's good enough for me, if it's good enough for you.
Yeah, I think we've sort of beat this one to death, and I think you fulfilled your obligation to RedLegNation.com today. So I want to encourage everyone to go to RedLegNation.com every day, where you'll see coverage of the Reds every day. That's all we do, talk about the Cincinnati Reds, even in a year like this one. Actually, there's more to talk about this year than in most years. So come on over and check us out. Leave some comments. Subscribe to the Red Leg Nation Radio podcast, and you'll find links at Red Leg Nation on how to subscribe. You can go to iTunes and search for Red Leg Nation Radio. Leave us a review. Leave us a rating. That helps other people find us. Leave us a rating if you're going to say something good, though. Come on. I don't want you to go leave us a bad review. Just delete the podcast and move on, man. What are you trying to do? You can check out Jason on Twitter at Jason Linden, JasonLinden. You can find me at Dotson C. Obviously, always check us out at Red Leg Nation on Twitter, on Instagram, on Snapchat, on Facebook, everywhere. Jason, appreciate you coming on again, buddy. I hope to talk to you again very soon.
Thanks for having me. It's always a good time.
And thank you all for listening. This is episode 140 of Red Leg Nation Radio. For Jason Linden, this is Chad Dotson saying so long, everyone.
The first taste of rare bourbon you finally got your hands on. That's nice. At Caskers.com, we make this experience easy. Caskers is a one-stop spirit curator with an impressive selection of exclusive, sought-after, rare, and household names in the realm of premium spirits and champagne. Discover the top flavors of the year now by going to Caskers.com and using code WELCOME10 for $10 off your first purchase. Get $10 off your first purchase with code WELCOME10 at Caskers.com.